Okay,
I
Mary Berg, I'd like
on.
To make an. I just want to say that I just I got on a different phone and hung up a different phone, so you heard someone coming, someone going, but it was all me.
Okay, thank you. So I called on Casey. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. First of all, I want to say I'm not going to speak to the wisdom or lack of having different criteria for different stations cemented into the bylaws. My job is to work under the bylaws, and so I did want to speak to the question of requiring registration in these organizations, because the nature of our organization is that there are many, many people involved, some of whom actually never come to the station but are doing work behind the scenes, but also the people who do come to the station are there at different hours and different days, 24 hours a day. It's a round-the-clock operation, and it is very difficult, not just for the unpaid staff organizations, but at the other stations as well. It's very difficult for us to determine exactly who is doing work at what time. That's why I tried to institute a tracking system during the three-month qualifying period. And hopefully that is being implemented at the stations, but I can guarantee you there will be some people who slip through the cracks. Those people will unfortunately be disenfranchised unless they are alert enough to see the list that is to be posted on August 1st at all stations, the list, tentative list of unpaid staff members will be posted and then may be challenged. People can say, I should be on that list, I'm doing so many hours, etc. Or they can say, hey, who's this? I don't know who that person is, or you know, or that person is no longer working here. How come they're still on the list? So then another list will be posted on September 1st. September 1st being the day after the date of record, which the qualifying period at the three stations without unpaid staff organizations is June 1st through August 31st. So if anybody puts in 30 hours, not just on programs, if somebody's helping by volunteering at the reception desk or doing premium mailings or whatever it is, they also would qualify if they put in an average of about 2 hours a week over these summer months to get their 30 hours in. Qualify. But as I said, not everybody is going to be added to the list, and somebody mentioned earlier that nothing is ever 100%. Unfortunately, that's true. But it is our duty to try to make the list as accurate as possible, and that's partly the reason for posting, to see if anybody's left out or inadvertently included. So that's about all I have to say for now. I just wanted to point out that it's not just production people, it's all station volunteers other than during the phone room work during the fund drive and other than working on LSB committees. All other work done for the station is considered as qualifying toward becoming unpaid staff.
Excuse me, Mary Berg here. Can I speak to that? The phone room people answering
Mary,
the phone
Mary,
and mailing.
Hank,
that's
Mary,
not part of unpaid staff.
Mary, hold on 1 second. Casey, were you done?
Yes, for now.
Oh, okay. All right, go ahead, Mary.
The phone room things are not part of unpaid staff. They are listeners, but they're not part of unpaid staff. I just want to correct that. And I also want to say that a list such as Casey describes, that's exactly what happened last year, when there was all the contentiousness that Sarah just talking about, that was going on, but lists were posted and then reposted. So there was, they were posted in the control room all over the place, and people did have a really, I would say, a really good opportunity to, plenty of opportunity to make corrections if they felt there were people either on who shouldn't be or not on who, so either way.
Yeah,
and
Carolyn
the last
here.
Thing, the other thing I want to say is that regarding people who didn't want to be on, there are people who they have been added, but that is there are people who didn't want to join the organization, and that was especially true last year because it was so contentious. So, but I think before that, in my experience, there were a few people who didn't want to join for various reasons. And they choose to opt out, which, I think people have a right to do that if they want to. You can't force people to be part of an elective process. So,
well, actually, according to the corporate council, they are not allowed to opt out. A ruling was made a couple of months ago that you cannot opt out, and therefore, if somebody opts out from being staff, they are also not allowed to vote as listener sponsors. They cannot run for the board as listener sponsors. If somebody tries to self-disenfranchise, then they are disenfranchising themselves from the entire election process, not just from the unpaid staff organization and the staff elections.
Right, that's correct. Has been the case.
Casey, can I ask you to make that ruling public?
Yes, I will do so.
May I speak to that, Carolyn, here?
Yeah.
Yeah, one question. If, in fact, people do not want to belong to the union, is the union representative of the staff, which is a criterion for being legitimate? The other question refers back to the points that Serene made, that people, as if people were making accusations and allegations about the staff list out of either malice or ignorance and bordering on harassment, as she pointed out. But that really is not the case. The fact is that there is no way to tell. She said it would be helpful to ask if one doesn't know. Yes, it would, but whom do we ask? There is no data. So I'm wondering, Casey, if someone challenges a name on the list and says, look, this person really does not do the work of a staff member, can you tell us why this name is on the list? How do you validate that? What do you do besides taking someone's word for it, which I'm finding very unsatisfactory?
Well, unfortunately, it's difficult for us to know if somebody is putting in the requisite hours, whether or not they're working inside the station. And a lot of work is done outside of the station, and the only real work done at the station is the production of the show itself. But the pre-production work we do have an estimate of how many hours it takes to produce a show. So if somebody says, "Oh, it took 100 hours to produce our one-hour show," and each of 10 people put 10 hours each into it, then that is likely to be questioned. I will rule on any challenges that are brought to me. The deadline for that will be September 15th. So basically between August 1st and September 1st, the list will be adjusted and then reposted, and then the final challenges to the second will be adjudicated by September 15th.
Well, last year I put out a form, and I think that Indra looked at it. I don't know if it was distributed or not, which asked everyone to sort of self-certify. What do they do? How many hours do they do it for? But then have the producer they're working for or the department head or whoever supervises that work to sign off on it so that there would be a piece of paper where people say, I did 10 hours or 20 hours. I did phone work or production work outside of the station for program X, And the producer of Program X says, yes, that's true, or refuses to sign and says, no, it's not true. Would there be something wrong with having some sort of paper trail on people so that that would make your job easier? In fact, if you had challenges,
well,
you could look at the file.
You surely saw the procedure that I laid out prior to June 1st to be implemented starting June 1st for tracking the work that people do on an ongoing basis rather than just having them reported at the end of the qualifying period. So I hope that that's in place, at least at the three stations that have unpaid staff organizations. As far as adding more qualifications to those that are stated in the bylaws, there's a reason why if you live in a state that has more than one congressional representative, you can run in a district that is not the district where you reside. And that is that the Constitution does not provide for representation by district. It provides for representation by state. Therefore, the states are barred by constitutional law from requiring that somebody live in a district that they're where they're a candidate for Congress. I think the same principle applies here. The qualification being an unpaid staff member is to belong to the unpaid staff organization at WBAI or KPFA, and I can't add any more qualifications.
Yeah, but you can look at the ones that exist, which are that management has to accept them. And if they're absolutely secret societies where the data is not public, to me that's a recipe for disaster. I mean,
well, it's public in that they have to post membership lists on August 1st and September 1st. And if there are challenges to those members, that will be taken up. Certainly, if it's pointed out that somebody stopped working at the station a year or two ago and they should no longer be listed, then that challenge will be brought forward. And I will then discuss that with the unpaid staff organization. And hopefully they will correct any errors.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Would anyone else like to get into this conversation?
This is Seth Monroe.
Go ahead.
I just had one question. So this process that has just been described, is this a process that will only be applied every election cycle?
Casey?
I'm sorry. Will what be applied every election cycle?
Posting of unpaid staff for verification of the veracity of who actually worked and who no longer works. But that process, is that a process that you intend to employ for each election cycle, or is that going to be periodically every 3 months or every 2 months?
Well, I've only been hired for the period of this election cycle, so I can't speak for what might happen in the future. But certainly many of the procedures I'm following were implemented by previous national election supervisors, and then some I have also introduced myself in order to try to overcome some of the administrative obstacles to fair elections.
Yeah, Carolyn here. I'm wondering if that process should not be at all five stations. The PNB was very clear that all the GMs must maintain a staff list. And I think for the very reason that I've tried to bring out, that there's nothing to check a staff organization list against without a general manager's list of staff that's updated every month as required. So I think to say that it's only required for three out of five stations is to misread that resolution. It was very specific about all five stations.
Well, does anyone else want to address this?
Right. Terry?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to mention Casey mentioned advice of counsel. While counsel's advice is useful, it's incomplete. There are options that counsel did not consider that I could explain in detail on a discussion list, but the issue is too complicated to get into on a teleconference.
Thank you. I appreciate you doing that. That would be helpful.
And I appreciate any input you
have.
Can
you hear
me?
Now I can.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I want to be on the stack.
Yeah, go ahead, Teresa.
Okay, do I understand this correctly? The persons in our station, when they work, they sign into a book. And the understanding is that when you work, you sign into the book. You don't wait until just before deadline and fill in all kinds of hours. And that is one disadvantage. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that is possibly one disadvantage to the WBAI process, where you could wait until the last minute and then put in 10 hours in 1 month, and that would constitute your entitlement for the whole year. Is that if I'm correct? I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong. But do I understand correctly that some stations don't even have a book that people fill in, or that anyone kind of checks off on throughout the year at designated dates to kind of keep tabs on the volunteer work that's going on at the station?
Do you want me to speak to that?
Sure, go ahead.
Well, the procedure I set forth only deals with the qualifying period, not with the year-round tracking, but from June 1st through August 31st, the management of all the stations is supposed to make sure that everybody who's doing volunteer work that could qualify them to become unpaid staff for voting reasons is logged in, not necessarily to a book, but to a register of some sort where their individual hours can be easily added and tabulated, so that we will know what their status is, and so they individually can know what their status is. I don't know if that answers your question, but I think that the stations are supposed to be keeping track during this qualifying period of all the volunteer work being done, so that people don't get left behind in being included as unpaid staff.
Well, something was said earlier about, well, you can just ask. Is there a person that one could ask at all the stations? I know at our station you could ask Robin Lewis, who keeps track of membership, and she also is in charge of the book where listener sponsors log their volunteer time and staff log their time. So is there a person that a person could ask? Because I certainly don't want to have to walk up to a person and say, what do you consider yourself? And maybe I misunderstood what Serene said, but I don't know who she meant for a person to ask.
Carry on.
Well,
can I ask, since it's directed to Serene, do you want to answer that?
My statement was with regard to understanding how radio production happens and the work that goes into each show that you hear. I said that if people were unfamiliar with the process, which is not unreasonable, that they should ask. Now, do I mean that any person has a right to walk up to a staff person and say, well, I saw your name on the list, but I don't really believe you qualify. Prove it. No, I think that's inappropriate, and that is essentially what has been happening in some areas.
Okay, so I guess I would. I'm
sorry.
My
just
question
listening
is,
to the call tonight.
Hold on, Teresa.
I'm sorry. I thought she was finished.
That's okay.
You know, I've heard at least twice the statement that, well, yeah, I know, just because someone says they do the work doesn't mean they do the work. So, I don't know. I don't know how to explain why some people feel it's okay to sort of call people liars. I assume that if someone says they've shown up for work at the station or they've contributed $25, if they've contributed $25, there should be a record of it. If they said they've done work, then hopefully they've signed in and out as they're required, and there's a record of it. If someone says to me, I was at such and such a meeting, and I contributed such and such, and that is my volunteer effort for the station for a year, I don't say, well, you know, you were at the meeting, but you didn't really talk, so I'm not sure if that qualifies. you know, this sort of feeling that you have a right to, first, that mistrust is the basis from which we should be operating. It is both disrespectful and a dangerous trend. And yes, people have said, well, I have never heard this person on air, therefore they can't possibly be a producer. I mean, that's foolish.
May I?
Be put back on the stack.
Okay.
I'm questioning the procedure.
Okay, hold on. Let me take it.
I have asked to be on the stack, Mary Bird.
Okay, so
Terry has.
All right, let me take a stack. So I got Casey, Teresa,
Mary Bird.
Mary.
May I speak to what Teresa asked?
Sure.
Go. Now, the example that Serene just gave is incorrect. Attending meetings does not count as work toward the station. That's made clear by the bylaws. And I just want to make that clear. It has to be actual certified work under either the volunteer coordinator or the show producer, whatever it is. But I did want to answer the previous question about, is there a point person who should know? And yes, according to the procedure that I set forward, there is supposed to be a registrar at each station. And that should be somebody who's already full-time staff so that they are there enough and so that they can make sure that the procedure is being followed. And so find out who your registrar is for your station. And also, of course, like I said, the lists are to be posted as of August 1st. So that's when it's very public knowledge as to who has is considered to be qualified as unpaid staff.
Okay, so I have Mary, Teresa, and then Terry, and then myself.
Yeah, I wanted to point out that with the union staff, there is nothing posted anywhere in any station. There may be that I know of that says who is in the union. I mean, you could always ask the union reps if someone's in the union or not. You could ask the unpaid staff organizations where there are such. If those people are there, you can ask the people I mentioned before. But there's no list to say that any union person is there. And I don't know that that would have been posted on August 1st or anywhere. So, to wonder who's on. And I also just want to point out, oops, sorry for the noise. Skateboarder went by. I also want to say that the work done in the phone room, that's it, in our station, it's the subscription director. That's the listeners who put in the 3 hours rather than paying $25. And the subscription director keeps track of all that, has that information, and it has been pretty accurate as far as we know, as far as I can tell. And I have looked at that back when I've been on the election committees for all the years I have been. And I don't think that we are having this tremendous problem. I don't know. I can't say for BAI what they have to say, but I certainly know we're not having a problem like that at KPFA. It's pretty clear cut. And whether you're on the air or not, as I said, if people are board hopping, that is known in the station, and the hours are posted, the hours, their shifts are all in the logs. So, and if they produce programs as part of a group, that's pretty well known too, and they're working with some department head about their program. So, I'm not clear you know, maybe it's at Texas, maybe they have a book. We don't have a book, but we have, I think it's just as good. I don't think there needs to be a book where everyone is listed in order to find that information.
Okay. Teresa.
Well, first I want to be clear. I don't think it's just any person haphazardly, you know, confronting someone. We don't want to have that problem where someone just points a finger at somebody and says, I don't know you, you know, do you consider yourself staff? I think that people on the elections committee, people that are monitoring these elections, they have a right to want to know that there is some sort of procedure, some sort of policy as to who qualifies, and there should be someone that should be able to tell them who is counted as staff, especially if there's a whole bunch of people that they don't know when they look, that there should be a person. It sounds like we now have someone that's designated that will be able to verify those lists. I have a question for Casey again. If a person is a union, do they have to, you know, record their time somewhere? And if someone is, is there someone still that will be able to say this person is counted as a volunteer staff person and they've put in such and such number of hours? Because I've been told in the past that there have been some unions that said, well, we're a union, we don't give that information out.
Casey?
Okay. First of all, the person who takes the complaint is the local election supervisor.
Yeah.
There should be no confrontations between members of the station. It should be taken up with the person whose job it is to conduct the election.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, what was the second part of your question?
The point of the matter, well, I hope we'll get this problem resolved because Carolyn Burden said that she asked the local election supervisor last year, and the supervisor said, well, I can't verify that for some reason. And I don't know why. Hopefully we won't have that problem.
I know. You were asking about putting in the requisite number of hours. As far as the WBAI and KPFA goes, that's really a matter for the union or unpaid staff organization to determine who qualifies for their membership. As was noted, KPFA has very different time requirements from the other stations. That's something that is an internal matter there. And anyway.
But despite the disparities, is there actually somebody that's keeping track of the hours? Do people actually have to record it, or can they just show up at the last minute and tell their shop steward, well, I'm a member?
Well, according to the procedure that I set forward earlier this year, all hours are supposed to be recorded at all stations.
Okay. Great. And within a certain time frame? What I'm saying is, can a person just come in at the last minute, just before the deadline, and say, these are the hours I worked, or do they keep kind of a running total?
Well, the idea is to keep a running total, to obviate that kind of problem. However, as noted before, there's some people who may not be in the loop and may find out at the last minute, if you want to vote in this election, you better let them know that you're, you know, doing all this volunteer work. I'm not going to say that people won't come in at the last minute legitimately to put forward their hours. But the intent of this procedure was to try to regularize it so people could see the hours that they're putting in and know whether they were going to qualify as unpaid staff.
All right. Thank you, Casey.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Terry is next.
Yeah, I just wanted to reiterate a point that Carolyn made, that the resolution of the last year's elections committee adopted by the Pacifica National Board requires every station manager in every signal area to prepare a list of staff every month to update it every month, not just during qualification periods like the election supervisor has established, and not just at those stations that do not have staff organizations. The intent was to have a staff list that election supervisors could then compare to lists from unpaid staff organizations or anyone's particular claim as to their hours worked that came late in the day. Because having the list published monthly and updated monthly, then last-minute claims would be discouraged.
So do you get the impression that the unpaid staff organizations will get the information from the general managers, or that the general managers will get them from the unpaid staff, or
just... They can be separate lists.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Serene's still trying to get on the staff.
Yeah, go ahead. I can barely hear you, Serene.
Okay, thanks. Just a couple of points. I think Casey, and I'm correcting because I think others may also have misunderstood, that when I made reference to people who've paid $25 or done volunteer phone work or people who've attended committee meetings, those qualifications, obviously, I'm assuming that everyone understands now that I was specifically talking about how one becomes a listener member. I understand
okay.
That the qualification for staff is very different, so I just wanted to offer that clarification. I was pointing out that there are some circumstances where people feel free to, that there's a disparate treatment there in terms of the amount of reliance on people's word that some are willing to exercise. I guess, you know, I don't see that being, and, you know, with all due respect to my colleagues, I don't see that saying that you're a member of the staff is something to lie about. I mean, people show up and they do their work, and they do their work in all kinds of places, and someone could very well spend, you know, a day traveling to a demonstration, getting sound, doing interviews, coming back, spending hours editing it down for what turns out to be a five-minute piece on the news. So, you know, people actually do a lot of work. And if someone has done the work to qualify as staff, it is, and people do work sometimes in more than one program, and maybe they're on air in one program and they contribute off-air to other programs. That certainly is the case at BAI. You know, the constant suggestion that, well, yeah, we can't trust them. We certainly can't take their word for it. They must be lying. I find it really objectionable. That's number one. With regard to what the GMs are supposed to be doing, you know, that's management's job. But there is a problem in, for me at least, when management then gets, and I believe this is the motion that passed at the PNB, I know that USOC objected very strongly to this and wrote to the PNB about it. I don't know, Bob, maybe you or someone else on Mary, someone who was on board last year, can tell us what they actually did, if anything, in response. But to say that USOC should go ahead and maintain this roster, USOC or OPSO, maintain a roster, and then management gets to decide, oh, no, that person doesn't qualify and this person doesn't qualify, sort of at whim, you know, so we're supposed to invest all the time and the labor in maintaining this roster that management then gets to dismiss just because? That's not acceptable. At the very least, and I believe we sent something forward on this, I know we certainly discussed it a number of times, but if someone is being challenged by management, and management can have all sorts of reasons for wanting to not have people on the board, particular people on the board, in much the same way that some other people feel that they have a right to keep people off the board, you know, that there should be a process by which any person who is excluded from the list that management prepares at a station, particularly where there's no union, there should be a process by which they get to challenge that. As things stand now, someone in Houston or in D.C. or in L.A. can work their butts off. And management says, I don't believe you've met the qualification. Management refuses to put that person on the list. There's no process. There's no process for that person. So they're, you know, just simply because, you know, and I know that everyone contributes their time and effort. The board members aren't paid locally and nationally. But the fact that someone spends time on a board and actually reads something does not necessarily mean that they understand the full extent of some of the decisions that are taken. And I would say that something that goes forward with no planned review, no planned appeal process for the people who are most affected by the decision is something that needs to be reworked. So the fact that someone can send out a list of things that allegedly passed, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean we're talking gospel.
Terry, I'm with on tech.
Yeah.
Carolyn, then, too. Thank you.
Okay, Terry first, then Carolyn.
Yes, the reason for the list to be published monthly is so that staff who find themselves missing from management's list can challenge it months before an election, and hopefully it can be resolved before the election supervisor has to decide. The maintenance of a list at stations with an unpaid staff organization doesn't make management's list the official list, because the election supervisor most likely will take the organization's list as the primary thing to judge by. But the appearance and the maintenance of a separate list by management can help resolve disputes with regard to either list, if there's more than one list.
Carolyn?
Yeah. Are you finished, Terry? Is it? Hello? Terry, are you finished?
Why don't you go ahead, Carolyn?
Finished enough to mute.
Sorry about that. Oh. I think there's really a misunderstanding as to what precipitates this. The problem is not that people are assuming other people are lying. It's that they have no way of validating any information. What people have been asked to do at all the stations, to some extent, is just to take one person's word for it. So the process that was proposed last year, that I think Casey said he had outlined this year, was to simply have someone write off and say whether you did it on the air, off the air, in the station, out of the station, at home, on the weekends. Yes, this person did this much work. If it was phoning, if it was whatever it was for the production of the program, yes, this person actually did the work, and here's my signature to say so. I don't think that's asking too much to have information validated, especially when people are not working at the station. So I think that it's not really fair to say that people are implying that other people are lying. They're simply saying, can we see some data so we have no doubts about how the list was compiled? And I think that if someone's being challenged by management or by the union, the two lists would be a great help, especially if they were well maintained. Now, of course, if people are not maintaining them, then we have another problem. But I think in principle, the idea is to simply avoid the kinds of challenges that my colleague is suggesting occur, and have occurred in the past, actually.
Well, does anyone from USOC want to answer the question about what the level of documentation is that USOC asks the unpaid staff to provide?
Well, Mark is here. Last year, we asked that the unpaid staff submit a form stating what they do.
Mary, we can hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Here.
Please mute. Go ahead, Marcus.
Last year, USAC prepared a form and asked the staff members to give contact information and also to state what kind of work they do and how many hours they spend doing. And we will do the same again this year. And if anyone challenged, then that's when there were challenges. The local election supervisor handled the challenge, and then she told us, okay, these people were challenged. And then we mounted a defense and let the staff know that we to defend them and that and let them know of their rights. And then people responded saying, yes, this is what we did. And the cases were handled by Ms. Davis after the challenge people submitted their defense. That's what happened last year.
Yeah, and I just want to add that this process has plenty of room for verification if there is a challenge. I mean, there are always other people besides the person in question who can either vouch for or say, no, they didn't do any work. If they're identified with the program, then there are the on-air people on the program who can be interviewed and asked, has this person in fact done the type of work that they said they did on their form? If someone works in a department or says they work in a department, then there's the department head who can be asked, did that person actually work, you know, this number of hours a month in your department? So there's not a problem for any situation in which someone will bring a challenge. There are very simple ways to verify the information. And so I don't see the need to have a generalized suspicion and a worry that somehow people are going to be pulling a fast one when all of that can and will be looked at. And the election supervisor, of course, is the ultimate authority, and they can, you know, they can make the decision as to whether they think there's a basis for the person's statement that they've worked the amount of hours. So, you know, I don't see where there's an issue here. This is a verifiable system. Well, it's 3 minutes to 10, and we had agreed to end this meeting at about 10. So I'll just ask for any last round of comments that people want to make, and then we need to set our next meeting date. So particularly, is there anyone who hasn't spoken in a while that might want to chime in?
I'm fine, this is good.
I'm sorry?
Oh, I didn't have any.
This is Mary Berg. I'm going to hang up and dial in again, so there'll be someone coming and going again, but it will be me. Okay.
Okay.
Now I have to go. In a minute, I'll come back.
Okay. All right. Anyone else? Casey, did you have any closing comments on this?
No, I just want to thank all of you for your input, and hopefully we can get these problems resolved to everyone's satisfaction.
All right. Well, in that case, can we just proceed to setting a next meeting date? I guess the floor is open for suggestions about when we should meet next. I would think this is going to be a little bit of a difficult time with people going out of town and so on. So maybe within the next month. Let's see. What about? Would someone want to speak on?
Well, I was going to say before. Are we going to try to shape it around the next committee meeting?
I can't hear you.
Oh, the next committee meeting is the 27th.
Right. Well, I was just going to say maybe. What about the week of August 20th?
I'm thinking Tuesday 21st. I'd be available.
I'm not, actually.
What about the 21st?
What day is that?
That was Tuesday.
What about Wednesday the 22nd?
Yeah, that could be okay for me.
Wednesday, August 22nd?
Yes.
I think we have a local station board meeting that night at KPFT.
Oh, okay. All right. How about Thursday, August 23rd?
There's a bylaws thing on the 23rd, I think.
Okay. It's going to be difficult.
Who's doing the bylaws thing?
I don't know. I'm just having my book, Bylaws Proposals, by the 23rd.
Maybe that's the deadline.
No,
it's a meeting?
Bylaws Revision Committee and Finance Committee on the 23rd, apparently.
Oh, okay. Those are national committees. All right.
The National Finance and what else?
The bylaws, it's actually not a committee. It's a working group of the Governance Committee, the Bylaws Working Group.
Okay, and are there members on that are members of this?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so...
Monday
the 20th?
That's good.
Anyone have a problem with that?
Well, are we sure? Are you Houstonians sure about the 22nd?
Yes, I'm sure of the 22nd.
Okay, because I didn't see it on kpftx.org. I thought we were all posting our board meetings there now.
Well, actually, Teresa, the third Wednesday is the 15th.
No, it's the 4th. And in fact, our board, the local station board meeting in August is on the 22nd, right? Right. That's right. That's right.
Okay. So
can I just ask, as an aside, that one of you posted on kpftx.org so the rest of the world will know?
I will do that. And I will tell the secretary of the local station board to do that in the future.
Okay, thanks. So let's try back again on Monday, August 20th. Any objections, any problems with that date from any?
I will not. That's a conflict for me with another local meeting, not a Pacifica meeting, however. But it's a large land use issue in my area. So I'd rather not have that conflict unless we meet. Could we meet earlier, like at 5 o'clock, or is that impossible?
5 o'clock Eastern?
Yeah. Are we talking about Monday the 20th or Tuesday the 21st?
We're talking Monday the 20th.
Oh, that's okay. I could do that. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, but we can't do it at 5 because the West Coast people, some of them that work 9 to 5 jobs, that would be in the middle of their work day.
All right.
So
we cannot meet on the 21st of August because that's Archives Committee.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
All right. So it sounds like there's no objection now to Monday. Okay, but is anyone on this call a member of that committee?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what committee.
Racism and sexism. That's the PND only committee.
Yeah, no.
We're talking about a Monday the 20th?
Right.
Right.
God, let me... I might have... what time are we talking about?
Well,
Are you on that committee?
No, but I have a different... On alternate Mondays, I have something at 7:30. If we can be done by then...
Well,
yeah, it would
7:30 is 10:30. I would hope we're 10:30. Done by then.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah, so we certainly should be done.
Okay, I have no problem.
Okay, so was that Odie before asking about the racism and sexism?
Yeah.
Oh. I'm sorry, can you speak a little louder? I didn't hear you. Okay, is that a problem for you?
No.
Okay. Okay, well, that would be really helpful if you could stream both. So I'm not hearing any objections, so it looks like we're going to make the next meeting Monday, August 20th. And is there anyone who has a problem with our current meeting time of 8 p.m. Eastern?
I prefer 8:30 because then it allows me to get something else done in the evening before I have to...
The earlier time is better for me if I have a conflict, but I might not have a conflict. So whatever.
But since I'm on the East Coast, I will defer to those people who, you know.
That works better for me, actually, 8:30 or
8:30 works better for you?
Yeah, but I can make it at 5, too, if I have to. I mean, 8 o'clock, rather.
All right. Well, any other preferences either way, 8 versus 8:30?
8 is better for me. The next day is a work day, and it's... late enough, starting at 8 p.m.
Okay.
You know, if we start at 8, tonight we started, I think, at 8:17 or something.
Mm. That's true.
Perhaps if we started at 8:30, we won't get going till near getting on for 9. So I would vote for the 8 o'clock time because I don't remember a meeting that started on time.
Okay. Does anyone object, then, to leaving it at 8 o'clock Eastern?
No.
Okay. So then I think that's it. It's Monday, August 20th, 8 p.m. Eastern. And I guess that's all for tonight. So thank you, everyone, for participating.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you for a good meeting.
Okay.
Oh, thank you, Bob.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Okay, good night.
Well, never heard my agenda item come up.
Oh, well, save it for
next time.
Time, dear. Save it. There'll be time. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Take care, all. Good night.
Serene, call me, please. Bye.
Call you once.